We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's up, guys? Before we jump into the show, I want to tell you about some game-changing coffee. Strava Craft Coffee is a CBD-enriched coffee that has really changed lives. The reviews are incredible, so make sure you check them out. What you'll find is that this CBD-infused coffee has taken away long-term migraines, back pain, arthritis, IBS. It's helped decrease anxiety, whatever it is, you name it. CBD is an all-natural and non-psychoactive ingredient. The coffee is rich and tasty. Check it out for yourself today and receive 20% off when you use the code BSN2019 at checkout, and you'll get it shipped straight to your door. Let's jump into the show.
Broncos country is sitting in the south stands, drinking the Coors from Mile High, the best part of the weekend. Hugging a perfect stranger as they become a friend, having a good time when the orange and blue WIN.
You know what day it is, Henry?
What day is it, Ryan?
Not hump day.
Well, I mean, it is though, right?
It is hump day.
Okay, yeah.
But it's actually We Get Mad Wednesday.
I love We Get Mad Wednesday. This is actually my first. No, this is my second We Get Mad
what
Wednesday.
Did you guys get mad about two Wednesdays ago?
That's what I'm trying to remember.
Was it the Philip Lindsay?
I think it was the Philip Lindsay, ranking him 23rd or 26th or whatever he was.
How mad were you?
I was pretty mad.
It was pretty bad. That was.
Yeah. Well, it was more just confusing because there was the other stuff. Like, he was still ahead of David Johnson. Like, yeah, he was still ahead of Mark Ingram.
What were these rankings? They've
all been terrible. We've been talking about these NFL.com rankings. They just keep ranking things, and they never make any sense.
You know how we always talk about how whenever they rank them super low, they, like, only say nice things about them?
Yes.
Well, remember how we were talking yesterday, how the PFF ranked the Broncos offensive line 12th?
See, that's how this thing, like, that's how they mess everything up. Because now Broncos fans are saying, oh, look, yeah. They like respect us, and then everybody else in the league is like, seriously, you put us behind the Broncos?
So I went and read that article, and it didn't say any nice things about the Broncos offensive line.
I can't blame them.
But how did they rank them 12th then? Like, it's like
I
the opposite
know.
Of the other thing. They're like, Vic Fangio is the worst coach in the league, and then you read the thing and it's like, Vic Fangio is an amazing coordinator, he just put together an amazing staff, and then it's like, Philip Lindsay is the 23rd running back in the NFL, and it just gushes about Philip Lindsay. Well, this was like, it was like, the Broncos offensive line is like 12th overall. And it was like, Garrett Bowles is still a huge question mark. Connor McGovern really struggled at center last year. Dalton Risner is extremely young. Ron Leary is never healthy. And Juwan James is decent. I'm like, and that's 12?
12th.
Like, that's what, I guess that's just an indictment on how bad offensive lines are in the NFL.
It has to be.
But that's not what I want to get mad about today.
What do you want to get mad about, Ryan?
I assume you did your homework.
I definitely did my homework.
So no spoilers.
No spoilers.
Well, spoilers if you haven't caught this week's episode.
I can't believe that anybody wouldn't have watched this week's episode yet.
No, everyone who listens to this podcast also watches The Bachelorette religiously because they want to know what's going on.
You have to know what's going on.
It's time for Hannah B to step up. and make some decisions.
Seriously.
Because I'm not sitting here trying to spend 2 hours of my precious life watching that show to see no one get sent home.
Nothing happened. The show did not progress at all.
And I've used this before, but it's the same thing as a football game ending in a tie. It should not happen. Everyone wasted their time. There's injuries, heartbreak, whatever. They lay it all out there on the field, and no one loses? Someone's got to lose.
Yeah, somebody has to lose.
Someone has to lose. And you know what? Jed is a bag. We know that Jed is a bag.
We are definitely anti-Jed. And the only redeeming thing, like, the reason we don't get mad about Hannah for Jed is that she doesn't know.
Yeah, exactly. But I actually sympathize with him. He's like, what, you're saying I tied with Luke P? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no. That's terrible. I mean, because all Luke P has is, like, an incredible body. And then, like, that's it. Like, a decent beard, a great body. And Hannah V is so into it. Like,
his
everybody
eyebrows
else,
really get on my nerves.
Oh, my God.
He's got bright blonde hair and then, like, black eyebrows.
He's just, like, weirdly muscular, though. Like, his face, just the shape of his face. I don't get how she would be into that. I don't know. He doesn't look like a person.
So, anyways, we went through the whole episode. Hannah B couldn't pull the trigger, which I love Hannah B.
I mean, is this
going to
happen
again?
That's
the worst thing she's done so far. Yeah, what are we going to do? It's just everlasting season?
Now
never
that the
ends?
Precedent is set, she can just keep us stringing along as long as she wants to.
We need a bachelorette expert, because what happens now? We're in the office. I'm going to ask Allie. Do they go back on like another trip? Is that?
So they go on their like trip to... I think they go to Greece, and then she gets to invite them back to the fantasy suites if she chooses.
So next week is fantasy suites.
Yes.
And
that's where we've seen all the commercials.
Do you earn that? Is that like an award?
Yes. So the date has to. So it's like the rose. So the date has to go well, and then there's a card, and she's like, "Well, do you want to go tonight and spend the fantasy suites with me?"
So they all go. Do they all go on an individual?
Yes. That's why the guys don't have to hang out with each other anymore. So no guy has to hang out with Luke P again.
That would be kind of discomforting, because Luke P always, in a term that is apparently popular now, Luke P always spills the tea. Like, you always know what happened on his date. So now they're just going to be in the dark on that.
Yeah, but the commercials are all show what happens on Luke P's.
Yeah, that kind of made me mad, too. I hate spoilers. The commercials just, we pretty much know that Luke P's going home next week.
But that's because... everyone hates him. America hates Luke P. And people are mad at Hannah B. So they like, the show needs to show people like, oh, don't worry. She doesn't choose him. He doesn't win.
I kind of wanted to live in a world where like Luke P might win and everyone's just outraged. Because that might actually make me like Luke P.
Yeah, I get the mic back after that one. I mean, you can't cheer for Luke P., but there is something about the bad guy winning that just feels good. Like,
well,
it
angers
all
the diehards. It's just
like
everyone can be mad. We can have We Get Mad Wednesday every day if
exactly.
Luke P wins.
Exactly. I just, for those of you who didn't watch this week was hometowns.
That's everyone that's listening.
That's everyone that's listening. There were, Allie wants it back.
I'd also like to apologize. I feel like I got Ryan hooked on this, and now he's hooked into the Bachelor in Paradise, Bachelorette cycle. He was like, oh, this is too great of content. I will forever be watching this. And I was like, oh, God. So, to Broncos country, I apologize that you guys have to hear about the Bachelor and Bachelorette.
All right, you don't just get to take the mic whenever. You have to be invited on the mic.
Yeah. Allie also got me hooked, and so this is just kind of becoming a thing here. But yeah, it was hometowns, and so...
make it quick.
Hannah takes like the four guys left. They all go back to the guy's hometown, and so you get to meet all the families. And like Peter just has the sweetest, like fun. You didn't like Peter's family?
They were too much. They reminded me of the Gurgitches. I don't know if you watch Parks and Rec.
Oh yeah.
Eggs, bacon, and toast. Like that was their little like.
But like Hannah's weird too. Like for me, like
Hannah's
that'd be
weird
a bit much.
In
but
like a normal way.
I think Hannah would buy into that stuff.
Oh, God. The, like, dancing, singing German thing before dinner that if I was on the show.
It's endearing.
Like, you know what, Peter? You're really nice, but it's just not working out.
But which family was better?
Tyler C's family was the best.
No, his dad had cancer. That's like the thing that, like, you're like, okay, everybody's kind of like rallying around. Like, that's, you know, everybody's just like very positive and like happy and like loving.
But there
it is. But there's like this part too where I'm just like, okay, but yeah, like it's going through a crisis. Of course, everybody's tight and close. Whereas like Peter's family just looks like they're having a great time.
No, no. Peter's family looks just fake.
I don't know. I don't know.
All right. Well, I also want to talk about sports today.
Okay. We can do that.
That might as well be a sport. I mean, it's so good.
It's, but yeah.
We are, Henry, less than a week away from training camp.
But we're still talking about The Bachelorette.
Well, that's because it's incredible. But we're getting close here. And I want to know what you think. Well, let's just start with the biggest. What is the biggest question you need answered in the 19 practices that will be Denver Broncos training camp?
So, I mean, if I were at every practice, the first thing I'm looking at every single day, and probably for more than half the practice, is Drew Lock. That's what I want to see. Like, does Drew Lock have it? Is Drew Lock the number two? I mean, in my
he better
dreams,
be the number two.
Yeah, in my dreams, like, toward the end of camp, we're saying, like, oh, yeah, I mean, like, the Broncos have to roll Joe Flacco out there, right? Like, you know, he's the guy. They have to do it, even though Drew Lock looks like he could probably handle it. You know, that's what I want to see. And like, sure.
I like that because that's different than what I'm thinking.
Really?
Keep going, though. Keep going.
Yeah. And so I just like, I like the potential to see a star to position the Mavs because there's other stuff. Like, there are rookies like Noah Fant who's going to contribute right away, or Dalton Reisner, and all those things are important. But for the next 15 years, you just like Drew Lock coming out and playing well in the next couple of weeks would just mean so much going forward.
It's really true. In terms of the future of the Broncos, there's like two main things. They need an owner and they need a quarterback.
Yep.
And one of those things should be on the field on Thursday when they start practice. Oh, I guess I said we're less than a week. We're really actually a week and a day. So still okay. Got some breathing room.
Okay.
Here. We're less than a week away from the media barbecue, which is the unofficial start. But we should see in 19 practices. I'm going to say that as much as I can because that is insane.
That's too many.
Training camp is a whole month.
It's incredible. That's usually, just going to wear these guys down.
It usually feels like a month, but this one is going to be a whole month. We should see by the end of that many practices, like, okay, Drew Lock is trending in the right direction. He has it all. He has the tools. He's the number two. You know, there are a lot of questions surrounding Drew Lock. But I guess for me, I'm much more concerned about this season.
Okay.
And so what I want to see is that offensive line capable of being good? They don't have to show me. It's going to be hard for them to show, you know, how good they are just right off the bat. But I want to see, like, can Connor McGovern snap the ball off of Joe Flacco's damn shoelaces? Like, can we get it up to at least his knees?
Yeah.
There's way too much of that in OTAs. I want to see, like, is Dalton Reisner the truth right now? Because that's what they need.
It is.
They need him to – he doesn't necessarily have to be Quentin Nelson, but he has to be able to step in and play just as fast as he did.
Yeah, and I've said it a few times on this podcast, but, like, the Broncos could win 6 games, the Broncos could win 9 games. I think that's their range, and that doesn't really excite me. Like, it's enough to, like, keep me tuned in, watch the progress, all that kind of stuff. What really excites me is a year from now or 2 years from now when maybe they're starting to actually put together a Super Bowl quality team. And for that to be the case, that's why I go back to Drew Lock, where it's just, can he be the guy? And honestly, in my mind, if everybody else in the draft just busts and Drew Lock works out, that's a good draft. If Drew Lock busts and everybody else plays well, then, like, yeah, you're happy with it. But there's still that big hole at quarterback that needs to be filled. And that's why that's what I'm most interested in over the next few weeks.
In your opinion, is best case scenario that Drew Lock, like, Russell Wilson's the starting job?
The context matters. Like, if Joe Flacco's just throwing interceptions on every play and you're throwing Drew Lock out there because you, like, he's the better of two bad options, but you think he'll grow, then that scares me because there's a potential for him just to be broken behind a bad offensive line. But if both quarterbacks are playing well, I like I said before, what I really want is at the end of camp for people to be saying, you know, maybe we should be starting or Drew Lock. Maybe it shouldn't be Flacco. Even though we understand like Flacco's the guy, it's his turn. I want there to be whispers.
Fair enough. Here's what I'm not going to say is a question I need answered during this training camp, and it goes into that, which I don't think you're going to get that wish. I don't think Joe Flacco is that big of a question for me going into training camp. In fact, I'll guarantee right now that Joe Flacco has an amazing training camp because we learned last year that veteran quarterbacks have great training camps. So it's going to be hard to evaluate what Joe Flacco is with the lingering doubt in the back of your mind of, okay, well, Case Keenum was amazing last year in training camp. I already know that Joe Flacco is going to be amazing in training camp because he was amazing in OTAs. So that's not a question to me. Those questions aren't going to be answered until the preseason, and that's a, you know, a whole different discussion. And even then, but that was the first time we saw cracks in the armor for Case Keenum. Remember, he had a bad first preseason game, and I'm pretty sure not great in the second. Yep. And people were like freaking out, and we were sitting there like, yeah, but he's been like incredible every day in training camp. Like, I'm sure he'll get in a rhythm once the season starts. It never happened. So if Joe Flacco goes out, has an amazing training camp, has an amazing preseason, then maybe I'm thinking, okay, you know, he's going to be able to put up those 2-1 in that 2-1 range that you're hoping for.
Yep.
That's not a question to me. So for me, it comes down to what you said. And then the other one, as it relates to the offense, is Rich Gangarello. Mm. We saw very vanilla looks during OTAs. We didn't necessarily, like, you wouldn't have been able to, like, point out a scheme based off of what you were seeing out there. I think by the end of 19 practices,
yeah,
you should be able to say, okay, here's what the offense is going to look like. Is it more, you know, Kubiak? Is it more on the Kyle Shanahan side of that? Is it a little more shotgun? Like, what is it going to be? Because we have an idea of the scheme. We have an idea of the overarching.
It's like that West
mentality.
Coast.
Yes, it's the West Coast mentality, but. I think everyone was talking about under center, because of what John Elway said really about Kyler Murray at the combine, which is like, we need a guy who can play under center. I think you're actually going to see a lot more shotgun than people are expecting.
I sure hope so, because that when you think of when the Broncos offense has looked good, it's been out of the shotgun. And that's not even just the Broncos. That's most of the NFL. Just giving a quarterback a chance to take a few steps back and see everything in front of him, it just makes it so much easier. It's the same thing as putting guys in motion before the snap. Every play, throw somebody in motion and it'll tip off something that's going on with that defense. But for some reason, the Broncos still didn't do that much last year.
Nothing that they did last year really made much sense. Like, they didn't go play action, even though all the stats were told you that Case Keenum was best in his career on play
and
action.
That offense historically, like, that's what that offense is built around. You run the ball up the middle and then you run
what
the
offense
play.
Though, because we don't even know what offense they were running. Like,
yeah,
there was no identity at all to that offense.
It was just hard to watch.
And so they didn't go play action. They didn't use Phillip Lindsay in the passing game, which was a massive head scratcher. They wouldn't throw jump balls for Cortland Sutton. It was like nothing they did made sense.
They didn't play to anybody's strengths, and they didn't cover up anybody's weaknesses
either.
Not even
Case Keenum's.
No, nobody's.
That is, I mean, that was mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's...
And so that's what I want to see. I want to be able to walk away from training camp and be like, oh, okay, so I see what they're doing. Like, they decided, and like, this should be obvious, but it's like, he looked at what Joe Flacco does best, what Cortland Sutton does best, what Phillip Lindsay does best, what this offensive line does best, and built that around the West Coast idea.
Yeah, you come up with the three plays that give all, like, your four or five best players the best advantages, and then fill in the gaps with everything that'll just build off of those, like blend them together so that you have one cohesive system. Like, if you're trying to work toward getting these big plays for these players, but behind that, you make it so that it isn't predictable what you're doing. You know, like, it's all just those little quirks, all these little twists in different directions off of those main plays that you want to get to.
Yeah, I also just really want to see that jet sweep action all the time.
That works for the rest of the...
Well, both Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay did it continuously last year. And you got to have the player. I guess it would be Emmanuel Sanders once he's healthy.
Has to be, right?
And that brings me to the next question. When's Emmanuel Sanders out there? Because it's not going to be the first day. I have a pretty good feeling about that. Cortland Sutton already said, like, I'm excited to go out there and be the number one receiver in training camp. So is it a week? If Emmanuel Sanders is back in a week, I feel really good.
For
is
sure.
Is it 2 weeks? Emmanuel Sanders is back in 2 weeks, I feel really good.
I'm still feeling good.
Is it 3 weeks? Now I'm starting to get a little iffy. Is it the last week of training camp? Well, okay, now you're like, at least he got out there. Is he out there for training camp at all? If he's not, now I'm worried.
And I'm worried because we just have no idea. Because everything that Emmanuel Sanders has put out there makes it sound like he's ready to go. Like, hey, look at me. I'm cutting full speed. I'm ready to play football. But then you hear about it, and you're just like, well, wait, really? You tore your Achilles. That's supposed to take a while.
He looks like, I mean, he's running full speed, cutting full speed. What else do we need?
I don't know, and that's the scary part, is that we don't really know what we're waiting on.
I said this on the podcast with Zach, and I talked to a couple people who have dealt with this injury before, and they said it's really not that hard to get to 90%. Huh. Getting from 90 to 100 takes a while.
Interesting.
And Emmanuel has been very vocal. I'm not going out unless I'm 100%. And I don't know when that's going to be. And if he's going to wait for that, maybe it's week 4.
Yeah.
Like, that's what worries me, is this offense kind of needs him to unlock it.
For sure. Like, he's their speed threat.
He makes it so that Deshaun Hamilton is going up against number threes, and Cortland Sutton is going up against number twos. Like, they can probably win those matchups.
Yeah.
But we saw up close and personal what happens when Cortland Sutton goes up against a number one receiver, and he averaged, I think, 30 yards a game.
Yeah, he catches
number one corner, sorry.
He catches a 15-yard pass, not on a third down or anything, stands up, spins the ball on the ground. That's how excited he gets about a 15-yard catch when he's going up against number one corners. I think it was. You just need Emmanuel Sanders. That's what it comes down to.
You need Emmanuel Sanders because not only is he your deep threat, he's also your most polished route runner.
For sure.
He's the guy who's been going up against number ones for years. He knows how to win those matchups. He's veteran. He's savvy. He is, in his own weird, quirky way, a leader. Without him, you are pretty much praying that Cortland Sutton takes a massive leap in training camp.
Yep. And I think that there's one silver lining to his injury. And that's that during training camp, he won't be totally focused on refining himself. When he's sitting out, he won't be thinking about, like, his route running, all this kind of stuff. And you have to hope that he's using that time to be in Cortland Sutton's ear, like watching Deshaun Hamilton go through every rep and saying, no, your foot needs to be here, not there, and coaching them up for 2 weeks while he's sitting out, if that's how long he's sitting out.
So to me, I need to see him by the beginning of week 3 of training camp to feel comfortable about the offense going into week 1.
Yeah, because that the three-man combination of Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, Deshaun Hamilton, that's the worst receiving group in the NFL.
If they stay where they were last year, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does not strike fear into the Raiders for week 1.
No, it doesn't.
Meanwhile, they're throwing out Antonio Brown.
Yeah, and if the Broncos can just put Emmanuel Sanders on the field, everything changes.
Yep. And we saw that. And the other guy's Phillip Lindsay. I'm not worried about him for week 1. I just want to make sure that he's out there. If he's not, I'm going to start wondering if something went wrong. Because remember, they kind of messed up Shane Ray's wrist surgery.
Yep.
They messed up the evaluation of Devontae Booker. Like, he broke it. He heard it in OTAs, and they didn't even notice until training camp.
That was so confusing.
So, like, they don't have the best wrist history. I want to see Phillip Lindsay out there just to assure me, like, okay, he's healed, he's good. It's not going to, you know, be something that lingers.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not worried about him at all either. People have been talking about, well, can he lift? Is he going to be in good shape, even though he's coming off that wrist injury? And I'm not worried about any of that stuff at all. As long as he's healthy, he's going to be Phil Lindsay.
One thing that I know about Phil that he used when he wasn't really able to lift this offseason is he spent a lot of time almost attacking the game like a quarterback, trying to learn defenses, understand fronts, understand that if the defense is looking like this, here's what I can expect. If this guy does, you know, does this pre-snap, this is what I can expect. And that excites me because for Phil, it's always been like passion, desire.
Yeah.
You know, all those things, heart, all those things that you think of when you think of Philip Lindsay, leadership, you know, fiery energy, all that stuff. You've never really thought of Phil as like, oh, he's like an extremely cerebral football player.
No, and you do see some, like he hits the right hole. He doesn't make those mistakes.
Like, he has great vision. Exactly. He gets it. But for him, and we always talk about with young players in the NFL, it's all about punches and counterpunches. There's going to be a counterpunch to what Philip Lindsay does this year. Teams have had a lot of time to watch him. They have, you know, 14 games of tape on him. There's going to be a counterpunch. For him to learn football at a higher level, and like I said, attack it almost as a quarterback, try to understand what he's seeing, that's going to be his counterpunch. Okay, I still have all that other stuff going for me. Now I know what you're trying to do to stop me, and now I can attack that in different ways. That's his counterpunch, and if he has that, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the idea of Phil Lindsay thinking like a quarterback should just be terrifying. Especially if that's what gets him to the level where he's doing the Le'Veon Bell, like, take two steps after he gets the ball, stand still behind the line of scrimmage, waits for things to develop. And with Phil Lindsay's, he goes 0 to 60 so fast. It's two steps and he's full speed. And so if he gets that part of the game and the offensive line can protect him, he could be unstoppable.
Think of it this way. The reason that C.J. Anderson was able to make it as an undrafted guy was because of that.
Exactly.
He always had that. He was extremely bright when it came to the game of football. It's what Peyton Manning loved so much about him.
Mm-hmm.
So if Phillip Lindsay can add that, because he has things that C.J. Anderson wishes he had. You
For
know,
sure.
The speed, the moves, all of that stuff. If he can combine that with the cerebral attack to the game, that's how he gets to the next level.
Yeah. Because was it Peyton Manning who was saying having C.J. Anderson at running back was like having a second quarterback back there?
Yep.
That's
high praise.
That's seriously high praise. So if Phil Lindsay could get to half that point, who knows what that could do for his game?
Well, Phil Lindsay is the ultimate Colorado football player.
Yes,
and Breckenridge
is
the ultimate Colorado beer.
Ooh, smooth.
And we are excited tonight because we're taking the whole BSN squad down to Breckenridge Brewery. We're going to try out all the different beers, see the sweet facility they have there. It's going to be super awesome, and as you guys know, we're going to have that perfect summer beer. Do you know where it's from? Well, it's from Colorado. Do you know what it's called?
the Strawberry Sky?
Yep, but what kind of ale is it?
Oh, it's a Kolsch. Coursed.
It's a Kolsch ale.
Kolsch. It's a Kolsch ale.
It originated in Kolland.
And that is a place?
Nope.
Okay.
what we know about it, because we are not beer experts, but the Kolsch ale is just that pure summer drink, that pure summer beer.
Mm.
You got the fruitiness of the strawberries. You've got the beeriness of the beer. They marry together. And this is what you think about on a summer day.
That's what I'm thinking about right now, Ryan. We're going to struggle getting through the rest of this podcast.
Yeah, we are. But there's going to be a nice, like, strawberry sunset.
Strawberry fields forever.
Strawberry
fields.
Yep. And so, yeah, tonight we're heading down to Breck. It should be awesome. And make sure you check out Breck and especially the Strawberry Sky because it is hot and you need it. All right, let's take a quick break. And on the other side, we'll get to your questions.
Green Mountain Dental has a long-standing tradition of being one of Lakewood's best family dental care offices.
I have been a patient since I was 3, which is in 1974. You know, my parents, myself, and now my children all go there. It's just a great place to be, very positive experience with them, definitely.
New patients can receive free teeth whitening trays when they schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam. Also, all colored sport mouth guards start at just $25.
The doctors will come out and visit with you, ask you how your family is doing. You know, just very friendly and family oriented. It's just very comfortable to be there.
That's greenmountaindentalgroup.com.
We're rolling along here on the BSN Broncos podcast, and we have a special guest. And no, it's not Hannah B.
It's too bad. I really like her.
It's Andre S.
Andre S. That's exactly right.
That's your bachelorette name.
She's on film. I watch film. You know, very relatable. I watch Players in Alabama. She lives in Alabama and drives under signs that say Roll Tide. You know, it's all
the same.
It's all the same.
Do you follow the show? You seem pretty.
I surprised you with that. Actually, Henry and I, on a lonely day where the family left me alone, we watched the first episode. And frankly, I'm kind of out.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I'm kind of out.
It surprises me, too. I mean, we just had like a great boys' night. I went over to Dre's house. We got some Chipotle, and we watched The Bachelorette with his cats.
It's true.
It was incredible.
That normally wouldn't be referred to as a boys' night.
That's right.
Did you guys eat ice cream, too, and talk about your exes? Like
it's almost like a girls' night with the boys, you know. But
yeah, it works.
Boys-girls' night.
I always had my doubts about Luke P. I don't know how you guys have sucked me into this conversation.
I haven't tooted my own horn for this. After the first scene on the show that involved Luke P, I called him making the Final Four.
Okay, now I've talked to this with Allie. Absurd that he doesn't give his jacket to her as she's like freezing.
Oh my god!
But
should have been
like,
eliminated.
What are you doing?
That.
What a savage!
Absurd, but not surprising. Like after knowing Luke P, I'm like, yeah, of course not. That guy's an idiot.
But his
family
says he's so nice.
Yeah, yeah, well, they sure do.
So you're out. So. I guess you can't.
I might be back in. Now that it's getting to the nitty gritty, I might get back in. We'll see.
Well, that's not the reason we brought you on.
No.
The reason we brought you on is because there is some juicy supplemental draft news to talk about, and only you can do that.
Well, that's building it up. But yeah, the Arizona Cardinals have used a fifth rounder on Jalen Thompson, safety out of Washington State. A guy who was kicked out, or rather, his final year of eligibility was kind of taken from him because he bought a supplement over the counter.
Makes sense why he was in the supplemental draft.
Sure does. Well,
wouldn't
done.
That be fun if there was like a draft just for the people on PEDs? And so like there was like a set number, like every team could have like four guys on PEDs.
That'd be amazing.
And you just have like this separate.
It's like you get the juggernaut.
Yeah,
you're just allowed to have one guy who
one
just
pass.
Juices.
Yeah, you get one failed test a year.
Anyways,
there's something.
Okay, so he bought an illegal supplement?
A legal supplement, but then I guess like didn't pass a test and for whatever reason was kicked off and doesn't qualify for NCAA rules.
Okay.
Huh. I've barely looked into this, so I mean, that's kind of the...
Well, you already knew infinitely more than we know about
the brief answer. Good safety. I mean, he's a guy who could have gone on day two, I think, had he stayed in school and built off of his honorable mention all Big 12 season.
Pac-12,
right. I said Big 12. Mm-hmm. How dare I? Yeah, I mean, a decent player. A nice pickup by the Cards, who I thought had the best draft of all. I didn't
As
love their Cliff Kingsbury or Vance Joseph hires, but I think that could be a lethal combination and not in the good way. But I think they've kind of killed it with the offseason.
It would be a lethal combination at the bars.
Like, yeah. Yes. Yes. So... They're adding a very intriguing young core out there.
He has a good name. We know that, Jalen Thompson. That's a winning football name. What number did he wear in college? Can you tell me that?
My dyslexia is kicking in, I think, 23 or 32.
Seems like a 23 guy.
If it's
that's
a 32,
a good number.
That's a problem.
Yeah, 32 would be bad. 23 would be good.
I wasn't aware of the number problems. I think it's 32, but no.
It's looking like it's 34.
34, okay. Okay.
That's for a safety.
A little Shaquille O'Neal there.
Yeah, I mean, if Will Parks hadn't been playing so well, I'd probably be more against it.
All right.
Interesting.
Well, Andre.
The Broncos did have the second pick in that.
After
the Lions in the supplemental draft. So,
they could have made a move.
They decided to stay put.
It's you give up that draft. If you take them in that round, you give up the next year's pick.
That's right.
If you're a win now, it makes sense to get a
100%.
Guy.
Yeah.
I was saying it with the corners that were available in last year's supplemental draft, that it was kind of like, if you're all in and you just cut Aqib, like, why not?
Yeah, and what did what rounds did those guys go in? Did one of them go
in
the second?
I think Sam Beal went for a third.
Okay, a third. And that was to the Giants?
Yeah, exactly.
Did he play?
Played a little, but it sounds like they're still high on him.
Okay.
I really liked Adonis Alexander, who he might have gone to the Redskins, but was like a sixth rounder, I believe.
Well, Andre, get off the podcast. We're done with you.
Okay.
No, I'm just
later,
kidding.
Guys. This was fun.
Can you stay? Can you stick around,
please,
for some questions?
Please, yes.
All right. Where was the one you were talking about? Is that the first one? Are you reading
top.
From the top?
I know.
We read from the bottom here on the podcast.
I just
come
don't
on,
understand
Hank.
That. Why? Then you got to scroll all the way past and come back. It's like circling back.
You got to pay your respects to who asked the question first.
Exactly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Think of the customer for once.
That's
jeez.
Right.
I mean, when you're watching a basketball game, though, do you remember the guy who made the first bucket? Do you remember the guy who made the buzzer beater?
Fair point.
Yeah. I don't know.
I usually remember both.
Of course you do.
Such great memory.
All right. Well, we're going to go from the bottom up here because that's the way we do it. First one comes in from Vaughn, father of Tom, who was formerly Dom Siglo. All right. He goes, training camp can't come soon enough, boys. I can't wait to hear you guys report on the sudden breakout and get my hopes up and then just be disappointed during the season. Ouch. He goes on with some other stuff. And then he says, also, I'm looking to add to my jersey collection. I have Vaughn, Chubb, and Peyton. Any suggestions on the new pickup? Keep up the great work, and thank you for entertaining me every single day. Well, thank you for tuning in with us every single day. You guys got your recommendation for the next jersey?
I mean, I'm a big believer in old school. Mm. You know, you can never go wrong with a throwback. So, you know, you get an orange 7 for
LA. That's so
LA.
Safe.
Also, no, it's very safe.
LA might be going out of style soon.
Ooh.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. Ooh. LA can never go out of style. But it feels like with some Broncos fans, it already is.
Yeah. A great retro jersey that's not super popular as a retro jersey would be a champ, but this is the offseason to get a champ.
Yeah, yeah. This is a good time for champ. I think mine, I'm going like the least safe route. I kind of want a Will Parks. I think that's a guy I could get behind. That's
a
fun guy.
You can't be buying a guy's jersey in a contract year.
Okay, yeah, I mean like practically, like
I thought he was going to say like Phil or something. Will Parks.
Oh, Phil's not going out there. I said I'm not going the safe route. I like Will Parks.
Crazy.
I mean, I think having a Will Parks jersey would be really cool too, but you got to wait and see if he.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's next off season.
Or go the super unsafe route. Go all in on a Drew Lock jersey.
That's the one for me. Yeah. Is like if you're trying to call your shot here, at least go Drew Lock because you got 4 years to wear it before you're wrong, or at least 2 years to wear it before you're wrong. But for me, it's very simple. His collection is Vaughn, Chubb, and Peyton. These are all like very safe plays.
Yeah.
Go Phil.
Go Phil. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, like Lindsay 30, it just looks good.
It does look good.
It's true.
Everybody here will love that jersey. When
go
you
with
wear
the
it.
Orange Crush one too. I love those.
The the Color Rush.
Yeah, the Color Rush. There you go.
Eh, I say go.
Not
blue.
A fan. Well, you're a little anti-orange.
I'm not anti-orange.
As I wear my just, goat shirt today.
It's like just tough to wear it with stuff.
Orange jerseys look good on the players. Orange things are harder to pull off.
They are. I try really hard too. I have like a Frank Ocean Channel Orange shirt. It's like orange with like the white album.
Is he still?
And he just can't
is he
wear
still
it.
Alive?
Yeah, Frank Ocean's still alive. Yeah.
Incredibly right over talented. My head. I've never heard of this Frank Ocean before.
Yeah, we'll get you on that later.
Probably not. Educate.
Probably not. Yeah.
What's the name of the Ocean's 11? Who's the main character?
Oh.
Well, there's like 11.
That's
there's no
like
main
their
character.
Thing, yeah.
Who is the guy whose last name is Ocean?
I don't know. Andy Garcia, who owns the hotel?
No, it's George Clooney.
Oh.
But what's Ocean's first name?
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Bob Ocean.
Bob Ocean.
We'll
there
Bob
you go.
Ocean.
Bob is great.
Anyways, what were we talking about?
Oh
yeah,
jerseys.
Jerseys. Yeah, I would go blue, Phil.
Yeah, I think that's a good choice.
All right, next one here is from Tokyo Bronco. He says, hey, guys, first off, Henry, you rule.
Oh, thank you.
It's been great to have Henry on the show, offering a fresh perspective every now and then. The BS team really knows how to pick talented and passionate people, that's for sure.
Oh, that's totally me. Thank you.
Got a couple of talented and passionate people surrounding me. He goes, when you guys answer my last question, Henry mentioned how he wants to see Chris Harris use his knowledge to read the formation and make big plays. I agree completely. I actually saw a video on YouTube from Peyton Manning's new Detail series on ESPN+. where he shows a play where Chris uses his football knowledge to see the play before it happens, and he capitalizes on making the big play against the Chiefs. If you're interested in seeing that, he left a link in the comments with even a timestamp of where it happens. He goes, question one, when can we expect another collab with Brandon Perna? I mentioned it once before, but we'd love to see him as a guest every month or two if he's down to do it. We'll try and get it together. It's a little bit tougher once the things get into full swing. But yeah, we got Andre, and he's almost as good as Brandon Perna.
That's right.
So close.
Yeah. Slightly different brands, but
yeah,
I'll take it.
Question two, how is the Connor McGovern situation of late? I remember a while back there was some serious concern about his abilities at center, and I was curious if you saw any improvements at the tail end of OTAs. If not, what should we be looking out for, good or bad? Yeah, if you remember, those questions actually came up right at the tail end of OTAs. That was probably the first post-OTA piece I wrote was just that's a big – or maybe I wrote that as my observations from the last day of OTAs, that was a big question.
Well, and he really struggled with the snaps, right?
Right, that's what it was.
That's the concerning part.
He was snapping them off of Flacco's shoelaces half the time. And that, as I talked about, like, an NFL quarterback will tell you the worst thing you can do is give them a low snap.
Yeah.
If you give them a high snap, they can, like, no-look it, you know, and keep their eyes on the field. If you give them a low snap, they have to drop
their
head.
Head goes down, yeah.
And they have no idea what they're going to see when they look up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, got to figure that out. How do you feel about Sam Jones from what you've seen?
Still seems a ways away.
Yeah.
It's kind of unfortunate. I mean, he has a whole training camp to take a big step forward.
Yep.
He's certainly working really hard. Both him, McGovern, all those guys have been grinding at 6-0. So
yeah, for sure.
You hope that he can kind of take that next step. I would have loved for him to make a push for that center spot, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Because what are the alternatives after that?
There aren't really any. Dalton Risner.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. Risner actually is the best alternative.
Risner's he's like the Carl Mecklenburg of the offensive line.
He sure is. Yeah, that's really true.
Yeah. Going back to like the end of that question, though, like what are we looking out for from Connor McGovern, good and bad? Like the good is that he's incredible in the weight room. And he's just like a big, strong guy. The bad is he snaps the ball off of people's shoes.
He's very mobile. He's going to be able to, like, you know, be just as athletic and get out on the move as Paradis did, if not better.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't snap the ball, like, you're not a center.
No.
That's a real problem.
That's number one. It's like telling me, like, you know, a quarterback can't throw. It's like, okay, you're Tim Tebow. Like,
you're like, not a quarterback.
Without the magic, you're nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, next question here. This one comes in from Lone Star Bronco. It says, what is one sports-related regret you guys have? I had tickets to go watch Denver play Green Bay in 2015 for the famous 77 yards passing by Aaron Rodgers game, but was talked into selling because my girlfriend couldn't go. We are no longer together. Never got to watch Peyton play thanks to that. I regret it constantly. You guys have any regrets like that?
I think that actually that same game, we were planning on making a trip down. I think it was right around Halloween maybe?
Okay.
Yeah, there might have been like a Mac Miller concert too. So like missing out Mac Miller and missing out on that game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no.
Double whammy.
Double miss. But yeah, I'm not sure what any others would be.
Well, it's funny. Mine would be similar, but mine's college football related. What was that game 2 years ago? The Buffs played Arizona and they're starting an unknown quarterback backup.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's no one on their team worth watching. What am I doing scouting? And then Khalil Tate, Arizona's quarterback, goes off for like 300 yards rushing. It was one of the most insane performances ever. I could have been in the press box and wrote all about this, and I just missed my shot. I will forever regret that.
I wouldn't have regretted missing that game because I think I've told this story before. I was sitting in the north end zone at Folsom Field. And all of his touchdowns were going south. So I just kept seeing like him like scrambling back and then just taking off and just running and running and getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And, like, I think he had 4 carries of over 50 yards in that game.
Oh, for sure.
It was
unstoppable.
One of the hardest things I've ever watched in my life. Like,
I don't doubt it.
Why can't they tackle him? I don't get it. Yeah. Why does he just keep running away from everyone? That was terrible. Mine is I had tickets to the Tebow to DT Steelers game, and I wasn't able to go.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, wow. My buddy asked me if I would, like, drive. He was driving back to Colorado from his college in Arizona. He asked if I would fly out to Arizona and then, like, do the road trip back with him. And I was in Arizona, so missed out.
Shame.
All right, what's your favorite sports memory, both live and televised? He says, mine was Trevor Siemian juking Joey Bosa for a TD run. That's his live one. Still support Trevor. He was never supposed to be a starter. Televised was Vaughn's strip sack touchdown in Super Bowl 50.
Yeah, for me, live, I mentioned it. Actually, there are a couple now I think of it. I mentioned yesterday the Broncos game against the 49ers where Peyton Manning breaks the all-time touchdown record. Mm-hmm. They play keep away with the ball, Sunday Night Football. That was a great one. My other one, I was also there for the AFC Championship game before the Super Bowl. I think it was before the Super Bowl they lost.
So 48.
Yeah.
That was also against the Patriots, wasn't it?
That was, and that's why it gets tough to distinguish. But
why
yeah.
Why is it hard for me to remember that game? Is there like a killer moment in that?
Was Super Bowl 48 no. Patriots Seahawks?
No. The
AFC Championship,
before Super Bowl 48, which was Broncos Seahawks.
Broncos beat the
Broncos
Patriots
beat
to
the
go
Patriots
to, the
to go to the Super Bowl.
Well, I don't remember that
yeah.
at all.
No, yeah.
Are we sure they beat the Patriots? That happened?
Pretty sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They definitely beat the Patriots.
Yeah, it's like one of the games yeah, that the Broncos yeah. beat the Patriots in the playoffs.
No, I actually brought my chemistry.
Right, and that's why everyone says if it wasn't for the wow. Broncos and Peyton Manning, the Patriots would have gone to 5 straight Super Bowls.
Yep.
Wow, I have zero memory of that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that game just
that's almost
wasn't
concerning.
Very memorable.
I mean, so that
sorry to ruin your memory.
They went to the Super Bowl. They won the AFC Championship game. It's a great game. But actually, so I was a senior in high school at the time, and my chemistry teacher was a huge Bronco fan. And so he was also track coach. He was at some track conference in Vegas. And he's like, yeah, I'm thinking about like trying to get over for the game. Tickets are expensive, but my family had season tickets. So we had a spare ticket. And so we were like, well, sure. Like, if you can get to Denver, we'll take you to the game. And so he ends up coming to the game with us. And fast forward to the end of the semester, I end up with a 90.1% final grade, just barely giving me an A- instead of a B+ in chemistry. And I think that had I not taken the teacher to the AFC Championship game, things might have broken differently for me.
Wow. That's high-quality bribery. That's
yeah. Right. No, it's great.
Got to get those science credits no matter how hard it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. For me, my favorite live memory is CU beating Nebraska 62-36. It's basically like
a classic.
At the heart of my love for CU football. It was the end of the first season where I went to every game. As everyone knows, I've never missed a game since at home. So that was incredible. CU was number 15 in the country. They were number 1, and they just wiped the floor with them.
Nebraska was number 1 is what Ryan's saying.
Yep. Yeah.
That's a good
they
one.
They also had the would-be Heisman winner, and they made him look silly.
Yep.
So it was pretty awesome. As for TV, best sporting event I've ever watched on TV.
My favorite
well,
sports
like
memory,
your
though.
Favorite memory.
Favorite
of
memory.
Any.
It was the parade after the Broncos won the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning's press conference was there too. I think the Super Bowl game could have been it, but there was also like the stress that goes along with that. So you're like sitting there, you're like, oh no, what if they blow this, all this kind of stuff. But then the parade after, just watching Peyton like go around town, million people out there cheering for him.
It's pretty dope.
It's just all positive.
I will say another one that has to be in my best live moments was I was at game 4 of the NLCS when the Rockies won to go to the World Series.
Yeah.
That's
that
crazy.
Was pretty incredible. And so maybe my favorite one of my favorite TV memories was game 163 that year.
Ooh,
with Matt
yeah.
Holliday touching home yeah. definitively.
Yeah, easily. That's a good one.
What do you got, Trey?
That's a good one. In person, I don't feel like I've been to some great ones. I guess I was to the game where CU clinched the Pac-12 South in the Rise season.
Utah.
That mm-hmm. was pretty special. That was pretty unbelievable.
That was cool.
And I was at the parade.
Oh,
I was
yeah?
at the Super Bowl parade. That was pretty dope, too.
What
we
about
lived so close by, we were able to just walk.
Favorite thing you've seen?
seen live or seen on TV was probably Italy winning the World Cup in 2006.
Ooh. That makes sense.
Nice. Especially, yep. And more so than the final,
can't
it was
relate.
the
well, I can't.
Right. I can't.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You can't. It was the semifinal against Germany. They go to double overtime, and they score in the final 2 minutes. And it was amazing.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, come to think of it, my greatest regret is not going to a Champions League final where my team was in it, and I had tickets. I had the plane ride set up. I got the okay from my mom, but I just felt like, it's too much of a pain. I'm not going to go.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, really, like, dropped what,
what's
the ball.
Your, what's your squad?
AC Milan.
Okay.
Okay. That makes sense.
Anyways, he says, lastly, who is your favorite non-football pro athlete of all time? He says his is Pudge Rodriguez.
Tough.
I think, honestly, mine would be Todd Helton. I just, when I was a kid, I just loved Todd Helton.
Interesting.
So when you guys were talking about like the best televised moment, best televised memory, my first thought was like this entire World Cup run, and I was like, okay, that's just like the recency bias. But then you get back to like favorite non-football pro athletes, like anybody on that team, like just watching all these videos of them like getting off the plane, just like carrying the trophies, like I just love them all at this point. But
I think that's still a little bit of recency.
I know. I think in a couple
bias.
Months, I might change.
I mean, your favorite non-football athlete.
Nikola
is...
Jokic. I mean, he's so the easy to love on the court, so easy to love off the court. He's up there.
Henry's showing his age in this segment.
I know. I know. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other ones.
It's tough to narrow that down. I mean, I'd have like, you know, Sakic, Forsberg, and Waugh would be up there. Larry Walker's my favorite Rocky of all time. I have so many you know, for me, it's Allen Iverson. I don't think it's even all
that
close.
That's a good one.
He really is like so important in my consumption of sports and his attitude and just my like consumption of pop culture and everything. Like
I do love, I love me some J.R. Smith.
Oh, my
me
gosh.
Too. Me
I
too.
Love J.R. Smith so
I think
much.
I think my first day in the BSN office last summer, I come in here and the discussion starts like who's your favorite nugget of all time? And you said J.R. Smith, and I was oh my goodness. This
Hell
is the first
yeah.
time somebody else I've ever heard somebody say something like J.R. Smith. Because that's I think that at the time he was my favorite. Now Nikola Jokic
is
so
all blasphemous.
Stuff. I love J.R. Smith.
Who's your favorite nugget
of all
time?
He's just like a freak athlete.
AI?
No, because as a nugget, I think he kind of blew it.
Well, it's just him and Carmelo weren't.
I have
weren't
a really
a
soft spot for Mutombo.
Okay.
That was a big Tony McDice guy.
I love Antonio McDice. I have an Antonio McDice jersey.
When we had
McDice
nothing
jersey,
else, Antonio like McDice was the bomb. You know, I loved Gallo when he was playing for us. I mean, you know, I think
I like him more when you say it.
I know. I was going to.
I think we
underrate Melo. Who do you like?
Gallo.
Okay, perfect.
Gallo.
Also Andre's cat's name.
That's right. That's exactly
great
right.
Great cat.
Yep. Good cat. He took to Henry quickly.
I wanted to name my dog Tulo.
I did name my dog Tebow.
Oh. Hmm.
Yeah, see, I mean, you do that, they'll eventually get traded. Only retro jersey names, guys.
Yeah.
My friend had a dog named Mello, which is actually a great name for a dog.
It is. It's perfect. It
name.
Is.
Yeah.
Tebow's a good name, too. Easy
That's
to
really
say.
Good.
Rolls
yeah.
off the tongue.
Yeah.
All right, well, we have a few more questions to get to here before we get out of here. But before we do that, got to tell you about Weinster. If you're like me and you're trying to figure out how to become a mature, refined adult, or at least you're pretending that you want to become a mature, refined adult, or maybe you just really like wine, you got to check out our friends over at Weinster. Weinster is an innovative online direct-to-consumer wine club connecting wine drinkers with more than 110 of the best wineries in America today. And what makes them really cool, guys, is that the majority of the places they work with are way too small to attract the attention of the big retailers, meaning not only are you getting access to some delicious and hard-to-find wines, you're also supporting those local, small, cool wineries made by real people who love wine. With Weinster, all you got to do is sit back and relax as they curate a hand-picked shipment from the best small wine producers in the U.S., and then when you fall in love with a couple of them, as a club member, they'll send them right back to your door with no shipping costs at all. And they happen to be founded by 3CU Boulder alums, which happens to make me a little biased towards them. Sign up today with the code BSN25 and get $25 off your first shipment of wine. Start being a real grown-up. That's Weinster, Weinstyr. Make sure you check them out, guys. They are really doing some really cool stuff in the wine industry.
It says CU Boulder on there?
What?
It says CU Boulder on that read?
It does not. I didn't put that. What are you talking about?
Oh, okay. I thought you said CU Boulder.
Oh, did I?
Yeah. Aren't you against that because it's assumed that it's CU is Boulder?
Well, there's CU Colorado Springs. There's also CU Denver now.
Oh, I'm aware.
I don't like when people call...
I thought just this refer was a pet peeve of yours.
My pet peeve is when people just refer to CU and just calling it Boulder. Like, oh, did you go to Boulder?
Oh,
because right, to me, I think of Boulder High School because I grew up in Boulder, and that's what we called Boulder High School. We had Boulder and Fairview.
Gotcha.
So a lot of people, out-of-staters, too.
Yes.
I have no problem with it. What I don't like is, actually, I don't care about it, but something that, like, anti-CU people try to do is call it UC Boulder.
Yeah.
They think that, like, makes people mad. I don't really care about that. For me, it's just when people are like, oh, I went to Boulder.
Yeah, my uncle always does
that. Oh,
nice.
Well, where'd you go to college? Because that's a high school.
My uncle went to Colorado State and does that, like, the University of California Boulder, because it's, like, basically a California school with all, like, the beige everywhere.
Beige?
Yeah, like, everything there is beige. Haven't you noticed? Like, all the buildings there's kind of, like, beige.
No, they're... sandstone and redstone.
Okay, and sandstone is kind of beige.
Well,
okay. I don't know.
Oh boy.
It's beautiful is what it is.
Oh no, it's beautiful. Like there's no beige just doesn't sound great,
that,
I guess.
They say that because like so many kids from California go there.
Yeah, and also everything is beige, like all the schools in California.
Also, did you know that California of all the states, the second most downloads we have outside of Colorado is California.
Interesting.
Huh, interesting. Yeah.
So don't hate on California.
Yeah.
I'm not hating.
Those are our people. All right. Next question here is from Mile High Mike. He says, hey, guys, what are the top three Broncos games you're anticipating this season based on fun to watch or how impactful the game will be? He says, mine, for example, number four at Green Bay. Number three at Green Bay. Number two. He actually says number three is retired for Mr. B, which is a little different in this case. That's a reoccurring theme on the podcast, Andre, if you look a little perplexed.
Yep.
So number three is at Green Bay, number two is versus Browns, and number one is versus Raiders. And he says the second game against the Raiders.
So the final regular season game.
For me, top three.
Top three
has to be week one.
Yep.
At Oakland.
100%. Last game we'll play at the Coliseum, most likely, right?
That's what everyone said last year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, most likely the last game there. And then it's also just week one. It's against the Raiders.
Yep.
It's unfortunately at 8:30. But those are always fun, those Monday nighters. So that's definitely got to be up there. And then I think you got the other two with me. Browns and – oh, actually – no, I like at Green Bay. Those will be fun.
Yeah, when I look through the schedule, there's that first Broncos game opening the season on Monday Night Football against the Raiders. Like, that's
yeah,
a great
we all
game.
Agree
honestly,
that one.
Like that last one, too, against the Raiders. But outside of that, there are a lot of games I'm interested in, but none that really, like, jump out above the others. Like, Fangio against the Bears, going playing the Packers, like, Jags defense even, like, off that start. Chiefs are always fun. But, yeah, I think I like the Browns, too. I want to see what the Browns can do, and I want to see what they can do against the Broncos.
When the Chiefs come here October 17th, that's one that I...
Is that
That was
national?
My other one.
It's played at 6:20 p.m., so it must
so,
be.
So, yeah, is that Thursday or Sunday?
I don't know. This schedule I'm looking at doesn't tell me.
You don't
me
know what
weeks,
October 17th is?
I don't know.
I do not. Zach probably would. He'd be like, oh, yeah,
oh,
I have a haircut planned that day.
It's Thursday.
It's a Thursday.
Thursday night football against the Chiefs.
Zach would know.
And now it's a home game?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's my other one. I'd go Raiders to open the season, Chiefs in Denver, and then Browns in Denver.
So what week is that? Week six?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Okay, week seven. Man, if the Broncos are just above water at that point, that could be a huge game.
Yeah.
And it's the week before their bye. No, it's not.
It's just that long
the
break.
The schedule's
so like
killing me, right, yeah. I got to find a better schedule.
I think you guys are good there. Yeah, that might be a little more exciting than going to Lambeau, although I am personally excited to go to Lambeau.
Yeah, that's
personally.
Reasonable.
Right.
But it's so weird. It's like hard to get there. I'm like, how is this an NFL city that's like hard to access? There's like hardly any hotels. It's very weird.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, Green Bay is like kind
like,
of an anomaly.
How did they get an NFL city there?
they've just managed to keep it.
I don't know.
It's amazing.
Why
it's one of the great
Milwaukee?
Things in sports.
Well, because, like, back in the day, like, I bet.
Because it's Green Bay, baby.
Like, they weren't trying to fill 50,000 seats. They're trying to fill, like, 500 seats back in, like, the 60s.
Yeah.
You know?
Can
and
you
so,
think
and
of,
so they've just held on to it.
Can you think of one thing in Green Bay that's iconic other than the
Lambeau
Packers
Field?
Lambeau Field?
No, I mean,
nothing.
Green Bay, there's probably, obviously, like, water there. It's probably, like, on a lake if there's a bay.
In my opinion, like, I don't even know if there's, like, skyscrapers there.
Context.
I doubt
goes.
It.
Yeah, there's definitely
not. Like, not, like, skyscrapers, but, like, high-rise buildings.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I'll come back with a report.
Yeah,
from
please
Green
do.
Bay.
Please do. Now I'm excited
between
for that.
Between Green Bay
I'm
and Canton, there's, like, two cities that are, like, really difficult to access.
Yeah.
It's kind of annoying to me. Anyways, that's just my personal annoyance.
Fair.
All right. From Dan Burke, just listen to the Bleacher Report podcast ranking front offices in the NFL. Matt Miller, who is a Chiefs homer masquerading as a Niners fan, has the Broncos front office ranked at 27th. He didn't go into detail. All he said is they haven't been able to find a quarterback. He credits Super Bowl and 50 entirely to Manning and didn't say anything about Elway's late round picks and UDFAs being huge contributors to that defense. Again, nothing on Elway and the Broncos having two promising draft classes in recent years. Nothing on getting his top two head coaching candidates on his staff this year. And nothing on poaching a coach from Kyle Shanahan, despite several other teams trying and failing to do the same. The real kicker is that he has Bruce Allen and Dan Snyder at number 21. Yeesh. He criticized Elway for not being able to find a QB and has Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen ranked six spots higher. That's when I stopped listening. That's pretty... How can you rank a front office that has a Super Bowl?
Well, and has gone to
in the
Super
bottom
Bowl
five,
and has how many division titles?
Yeah,
it's just recency bias.
It's
just
no,
like
it's
the last.
I mean,
couple
Elway
years.
Gets so much hate, but it's really unwarranted.
It just I hate when people say like, "Well, if you take away Manning, it's just like if you take away everyone's best accomplishments, most of them suck."
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's if like you if took you, away Belichick or if you took away Brady, yeah, probably the Patriots. You
right.
Know,
yeah,
like,
you've got Belichick's record.
The 27th best front yeah. office, actually, when you take away Brady and Belichick.
Yeah, it's like you can't rip people. Of, like, the reason that Peyton Manning came to Denver was because of Elway. So he deserves partial credit, if not, you yeah. know, the majority of the credit for everything that happened thereafter.
Yeah.
Well, and the team he put together
exactly.
around Peyton.
Exactly, that defense.
Nothing
right.
else.
And, but, then, the detractors will just tell you, yeah, but those players only came because they wanted to play with Peyton.
Well, Peyton only came because of John Elway.
Well, not only, but at least he had a big part of it.
Yeah, yeah. John Elway's the one that sold Peyton on coming to Denver.
To an 8-8 team that right. barely snuck into the playoffs.
With a bunch of psycho fans cheering for the quarterback that wasn't
oh
that good.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Yeah, he was, yeah.
I mean,
right.
honestly.
And like, parlayed Decker and DT, who'd done nothing at that point in their careers, to be like, hey, you like these guys.
You have to imagine.
Like, it's insane
some,
in retrospect.
You have to imagine that in one of the meetings that John Elway and Peyton Manning had, he was like, dude, we went 8-8 with that guy.
Like, did you
look
watch
how bad,
Tim Tebow?
Look how bad Tebow is. We'll never lose another game again if we have you.
I mean, the Broncos had never been at a lower point when Elway came. They're drafting second overall. They fired McDaniels. We don't know what's happening at quarterback. There's, like, Tebow around.
Yeah, that's seriously
and
an all-time low.
In a year, they go 8-8, win a playoff game, and he's able to get Manning. That, like, calendar year turnaround that Elway was able to manage once he started to, you know, that free agency is amazing.
We should have led with this for We Get Mad Wednesday.
We should have.
It's recency bias, but it's also just willful ignorance. Like, you're just choosing to ignore
yeah.
facts that would prove. There's just, you can, like, knock Elway. Like, maybe he was, like, top five before the last 3 years. And,
totally.
And now he's, like, 13th, 14th, 15th.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can say, like, okay, well, like, all that was great, but we need to see him bounce back from post Manning. Like,
yeah,
I can deal with that. You can't say he's one of the five worst front offices in the NFL because
yeah,
of him.
That's absolutely insane.
And that's kind of what I was thinking is like, well, maybe he has to do it again. Prove he can build teams twice and the first one wasn't a fluke. But then I thought he kind of did build a super team when he built that defense.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, he flipped everything around
yes.
and rebuilt from the ground up with
yes.
Peyton Manning there. But
in 2 years.
In 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty absurd.
Yeah.
And I mean, he points it out here. To put Bruce Allen and Dan Snyder at 21, I mean, think of the accomplishments that Elway has and the feathers in his cap that are there that they don't even have one of those. Like, they don't even have the division titles, I don't even think.
No, for sure.
So Elway had, what, 6 AFC West titles?
Sounds right. 2 AFC crowns.
Two AFC championships, one Super Bowl championship.
In how many years? 8 years? 7 years? 8 years?
If you take out the last three. Or is that with the last three?
With the last three.
So it's been, I mean.
That's crazy.
If you probably rank that, the accomplishments up against all the other front offices, he'd probably be second.
Yeah.
He should be top five. Like, hands down.
So, yeah, I mean, I understand that he's had trouble finding the next quarterback. He's had some very bad draft classes.
Bad draft picks.
But you have to look at the full body of work. Yeah.
Right, and everyone has trouble finding a quarterback. Like, welcome to life.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing to do
as a franchise that doesn't have a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
And when you're drafting in the late part of every round because you've won 7 division crowns or whatever it is.
And you have Paxton Lynch.
It's harder to draft.
You have Paxton Lynch and Brock Osweiler. That's just the deal. You have to hope one of them works out.
So, if we were doing this for the NBA, would you say that Tim Connelly would end up in the top 10?
Probably for
recency
bias.
No, because Jokic was a fluke.
Well, okay.
That's his. Let's get rid of that.
No, probably because of recency bias, he would and has what? 1 playoff appearance.
Well, and what I'm saying here is the only reason he would be in the top 10 right now is because of Nikola Jokic.
Yep.
And this isn't necessarily a knock on Tim Connelly, but Nikola Jokic, there's luck involved there.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
It's not like he thought when he picked him in the second round, oh, this guy could be a top 5 NBA player. He thought, like, oh, this guy has some nice tools.
Right.
So,
I wonder what he could turn into if things break
What I'm saying here is, like, he technically found his quarterback, and it was just luck.
Yep.
But now he's a top 10 front office in the NBA. And like,
probably higher than that. I mean, was he second in executive of the year voting this year?
Was he?
I think he was.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And there's just, like, there's luck involved in this stuff. In the NBA, it's finding superstars. They're really hard to find in the draft if you're not in the top. Well, he got lucky and found one.
Yeah.
All right. Next one here is from Broncos fan since 84. He says, hey, guys, you're all doing a great job. It's been a while since I commented, so I guess I'll catch up on a couple of topics. Ooh, this is a long one. It says, one, my jersey story. I went into a store with the intentions of buying a Mariners hat that I was going to as I was going to a game that night. Came out buying a Ken Griffey Jr. number retirement hat, a Broncos hat, and a Von Miller jersey.
Nice.
Their credit card machine was down, so they had to use the old paper copy style. A week later, I was checking my account and noticed that I hadn't been charged from it. I called them up to see what was going on. They said they didn't have any way to check on this, so I got 2 hats and a jersey all for free.
Dang.
Wow. 2, I was born in Colorado, though not raised there. I became a fan in 84 when I first started watching football. I could have gone with the Seahawks, but wanted to represent the place I was born. Nice. 3, RIP Mr. B. 4, football question. Going division by division, which team on paper upgraded their offense the most and which team upgraded their defense the most? We'll just do the AFC West. We're not going doing that for every division in football. Sorry for such a long post. Have fun and be safe. What do you guys think? Which team in the AFC West upgraded their offense the most this offseason?
Raiders.
Just because the standard was so low to start with.
So they add Antonio Brown and Josh Jacobs to nothing.
Well, and the Tyrell left Williams. Tackle, Trent Brown, right?
Oh, and Trent Brown. No, he's right tackle.
Oh, right.
Tyrell Williams from the Chargers.
Okay.
Just another speed guy.
Right. Bring some size to him, too.
Yep.
I think those are all the notable additions.
And then I guess second place would be the Broncos. You add Joe Flacco. You add Juwan James. You add Dalton Reisner.
I guess Noah Fant.
Noah Fant. Yep.
Juwan Winfrey.
Juwan Winfrey.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's hard to beat the Raiders. And then which team upgraded their defense the most in the AFC West?
I think it's the Raiders again.
What did they do?
So, obviously, Brandon Marshall from the Broncos.
Doesn't help.
Also added Vontaze Burfict.
Doesn't help.
Okay, there we go. Landon Collins.
Okay.
No.
Isn't Landon Collins there?
No, he went to the Skins.
Oh, that's right. Who was the safety they got?
LaMarcus
Joyner.
They drafted a bunch of guys.
I don't know.
Let's see. Raiders defense.
I know they added Cleveland Farrell. They added Jonathan Abram. They added Max Crosby. I mean, these are all draft picks, you know. Tough to say. I mean,
I think the Broncos adding Bryce Callahan, Kareem Jackson.
That's probably the obvious one is the Broncos.
It was LaMarcus Joyner that they added.
I'm not giving the Raiders any credit for signing Brandon Marshall.
You could say that,
but it's like an upgrade, though.
They
have such a bad defense.
You could say the Chiefs, who've completely reshaped their defense.
Yeah,
but they've lost so much. It's kind of an odd.
Yeah,
I think their defense ends up being worse than it was last year.
I think that's very possible.
What they did is a future move, which I don't understand. When you're in a Super Bowl,
you don't see him as win now moves?
I don't think so, because to me, it's going to take multiple years for them to get the right personnel for that 4-3.
Well, that's what they tried to do. They're getting rid of D4. They're adding Ogba. They're adding, who are the other guys?
They made some moves, but it's not that easy to just do that in 1 year.
It'll probably be
not this year, but next year their defense will be better.
And they added the Honey Badger in the secondary. I mean, my thing
is lost Eric Berry.
What they reshaped. Right, that's true. I mean, every addition had a subtraction.
Right.
So it's hard to make the argument that they actually. Well, and what they did was they switched up the unit that led the league in sacks. They were like, oh, we're going to change this area and it's going to make our defense better. When it's like, whoa. That's actually was the one good part of your defense.
I think it was just kind of like a Raheem Moore situation with D Ford. Like he couldn't be there anymore after that offside penalty.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then yeah, did so the Chargers I mean, do I guess anything? It's the Broncos. They added Jerry Tillery, who I think is a great add, but
the Chargers didn't need
does that
to do anything.
Move
like,
the needle right.
The only thing the Chargers can do to be better is not be the Chargers.
Right. And let the young guys develop and take the next step.
But like,
don't shoot yourself in the foot. Classic Chargers
style.
They're
gonna
somehow
like start 0-4.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
All right, next one's from Sac-O-Matic. So let me start by saying I don't watch The Bachelorette, but Four Roses, seriously?
That's
incredible. He says I honestly don't watch the show, but my girlfriend tells me about it every week. At first, I didn't care and would show interest to make her feel better about her rants. Now I find myself looking forward to the latest and greatest drama from the terrible Luke P. Why don't you just watch
that's what
with
we
her
want.
So you
yeah,
can participate?
No, it's such a great show.
Lastly, how does a guy go about finding any of those Breckenridge brews if we're not in Colorado? Thanks again, and keep up the great work. Well, it depends on where exactly you are, but I know there's Total Wines all over the place, and Breckenridge is carried at those. But I would just, like, around, like, when I was in Boulder, we had a liquor store called... I forget for some reason right now, but like it was the biggest one and they had everything there.
Apple Jacks?
No, like you go to the place, Hazel's. You go to the place like near you that is the biggest liquor store, they're probably going to have it.
Yeah, because they say they have it in 35 states. So there should be something near you.
Unless you live in like
Montana.
I bet you they have it in Montana.
Yeah, I mean, it's close. There's a good chance.
Montana's kind of like a beer state, isn't it?
Yeah.
Got
lots of beer people. Moose Drool, yes.
I know a Montana thing.
You do. We're going to have to work on that.
That's my one Montana thing. That someone's like, oh, I'm from Montana. I'm like, oh,
Moose
you had Moose
Drool? Moose
Drool,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Okay. But yeah, good. Let us know if you have any trouble finding it. Maybe you can just order some online.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? You can
I have
order
no
alcohol
idea.
Online. Well, I mean, you can use the Total Beverage app and have it delivered to you.
There you go.
But. I don't know if you can, like, order it across state lines.
I would guess not.
Who knows?
I don't know.
From Mad Dog 1988. I'm not sure if you guys covered this yet, but what do you think of Adam Frank's prediction of the Broncos at 2-14? I have to assume you're a new listener to this podcast because we only ripped that for about a whole week.
Yeah.
I feel it's absolutely ridiculous to predict that. You would have to try to be that bad. The 2010 Broncos were garbage with a terrible coach and terrible defense. Kyle Orton had a ton of yards, but it was all in junk time. As terrible as that team was, they still won four games. That was the worst team I've ever seen. I don't feel the 2019 Broncos are that bad. I think 8-8 is a fair prediction. I hope you guys have a fun time in Wisconsin when you come here for week 3. We're just talking about that.
Right.
Look for me. I'll be the only person wearing a Jake Plummer jersey, LOL. Let us know if there are tall buildings in Green Bay.
That's right. Get at us.
Yeah, I mean, the 2-14. It's hard to go 2-14. It's legitimately difficult.
So many things would have to go really, really wrong for that to occur.
Think how bad the 5-11 season was.
Yep.
I cannot imagine it being any worse ever.
It couldn't be. It just blows my my mind that a team could be that bad.
Insane.
Yeah.
There's no way this team...
Can't wait to watch every game three times and write the grades on that season.
I mean, you know, it would be really fun, though, is the off season with the number one overall pick.
That would be fun.
But
yeah, that'd be crazy.
Tua.
We're talking about, like, not Tua.
Love Tua.
Can you... I wish you could just trade that number one overall pick for the next year's number one overall pick so you can get Trevor Lawrence.
I'm a big Tua guy.
If only.
Okay, this one is really long, but I don't think we have to read all of it. It comes in from Super Bowlin. He says, something that really grinds my gear. Why does Sutton get so much hate on the national level? Well, I mean, Henry today said that the Broncos would be the worst receiving corps in the league if Cortland Sutton was their number one receiver.
I mean, without Emmanuel Sanders?
Yeah, that might be factually
good. I know.
I'm just saying,
Super Bowlin's gears are probably ground when you said that.
Oh, I sure hope not. I'm sorry, Super Bowlin.
He says, I'm heavy into fantasy football.
Dynasty fantasy football.
Man, yeah. I'm all over the place. And it became clear to me that the general consensus is that he had a terrible season last year, despite finishing for rookies top 5 in receptions, top 3 in yards, top 6 for TDs. I'm frustrated with this, so I started to look outside fantasy to see what people were saying, and I found it is a consistent theme in the NFL world, too. So much free time on my hands, I went back and started researching his statistical performance to previous rookies and how they are doing now. Below, I compared side-by-side Sutton's stats to other wide receivers that people are really high on. Okay, so... He rattles off, a ton of stats.
Yeah, you guys should go in the comment section and check this out.
Yeah, he compares Sutton's rookie year with Stephon Diggs over his career compared to Corey Davis,
Chris Godwin,
Kenny Galladay.
Tons of guys here that I'm sure that he proves that they are statistically comparable. He says, as one can see, the Denver bias is still alive and large. Sutton either had better stats than some of these guys who everyone loves or had something similar. To further break it down, if Sutton was a rookie in 2017, he would have ranked top 4 in yards, top 4 in catches, top 3 in TDs. If Sutton was a rookie in 2016, he would have ranked top 4 in yards, top 4 in catches, and top 4 in TDs. I definitely agree with Zach's predictions about Sutton. I also think his prediction from Hamilton is too low. In 2017, Flacco targeted the slot 173 times, according to Next Gen Stats. Yeah, well, those targets were going to the tight end.
Yep.
I expect a big year from both of our guys. Let's also not forget that they played with Case last year, so the stats could have even been higher. Sorry if my caffeine-induced rabbit hole is too much, just really annoyed at the rest of the NFL. Yeah, I mean, Cortland Sutton is a step forward away from being a complete hit as a draft pick.
Yeah, for sure.
And a flat step away from being a questionable pick.
Scary.
Yeah.
So,
that's a fair way to put
it. But he had 700 yards. Like, when you talk about rookies, most of them don't break 500 yards.
Yeah, no, it was solid. And to go back to the Flacco targeting the slot 173 times, yeah, Deshaun Hamilton's your slot receiver, but Emmanuel Sanders is going to get time there. The Broncos tight ends are going to get time in the slot. Yeah. They're going to put Fant out there. So that doesn't mean 173 times just for Deshaun Hamilton.
I expect 3 wide receiver sets to be down this year than they were under McCoy and Musgrave.
Yeah, you're definitely going to see way more 2 tight end.
Way more.
I mean, it's going to be almost every play, I think.
100%. And if it's not 2 tight ends, you're going to have 2 backs and a tight end and 2 wideouts.
Huh.
They could go, I mean.
Like, Jano's going
to
play
more, right?
What's
crazy to think about, though, is they go, if they went 2 tight ends and then had Sutton and Tim Patrick as the 2 wide receivers, that is a huge
so
lineup.
Big.
Absolutely.
So big.
I mean, you're going to have 4 guys catching the ball over 6'5" on the field.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Or 6'4".
Sounds good to me, actually. Sign me up.
Yeah,
I
mean,
really
obviously
like the sound of that.
And you're gonna run, and you're gonna be able to run like crazy.
Well, Patrick might be the fastest of that entire receiving corps, depending on
Taking
how healthy
Manuel,
Sanders
yeah.
comes back.
So that's
it's at least something to try if Sanders isn't back at the beginning of the season.
Especially if you're going up against a team with a small secondary.
Yep.
And those two guys can just bully them. And
like the Packers.
Right. And you get those 2 tight ends to the second level.
Well, that's a way to exploit a strength of Sutton's is get him out blocking.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And that's something that Azani also prides himself on.
Right.
Is helping those guys become great blockers.
Right.
And And even, you know, with Noah Fant being a, I guess, average to below average blocker, like, you have him on, like, small secondary players, he's going to win those matchups.
Right, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Sounds pretty good.
I like it.
Sign me up. You got me. You just found the way to get me excited about the offense. That's pretty impressive.
All right, Broncos film room. How the Broncos can use a massive set to have success.
Ooh, I'd love that.
It's like the opposite of the NBA. Go yeah. Big ball.
Yeah, totally.
Forget I mean, small like ball. The Nuggets, though. Jokic at center. You put Bol Bol at the four. Michael Porter Jr. at the three. They say you can play some two.
Yeah, that's oversized.
You can put Bol Bol at the two.
Okay. Put Bol Bol at the two. Put Paul Millsap at the
then
four.
Then you can have Jeremy Grant.
Oh, Jeremy Grant. Ah, love that guy. Really love that guy.
Yeah, the super-sized lineup. All right, anyways. I think that's going to wrap it up for us on a podcast where there's never a tie. And someone always doesn't get a rose. Sorry, Andre.
Sorry, Andre.
Just kidding.
It's okay. I mean, Allie, too. We could also pull Allie's rose. She was on here for a minute.
And then she just thought she was like a part of the podcast all of a sudden.
We had to push her away. Dre got to stay.
I did. You're not going to read this last question?
There's another question? There's a buzzer beater?
This is the buzzer beater, yeah.
Oh, wow. I did not see the buzzer beater.
7 hours ago, so not that much of a buzzer beater.
No, the hours things aren't correct.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
All right. I will read the last question.
Okay.
Comes in from Steve Atwater Hall of Fame, courtesy of Andre for pointing it out. I'm dying for football news, and I found myself researching the XFL. I find it interesting that they will allow high school players to be selected, as well as players being forced to sit out a year when they transfer or are deemed academically ineligible by the NCAA. It also allows players to make $75,000 and get professional training to prepare for the next level. This model seems like to make it a college alternative as opposed to an NFL alternative. For that reason, I love the idea. I think that one thing that makes the NFL so fun is the parity among teams. I find college to be less entertaining, given the bowl games, limited postseason, and the same Alabama versus Clemson championship that reminds me of the NBA super team model, and I find that extremely boring. You have to find a different way to love college football. If you're like trying to love it as a product, as a whole, especially as an NFL fan, you're going to be disappointed. You have to love college football for the traditions. You have to love college football for your alma mater. You have to
Bama and Clemson just need to lose one game, and boom, their shot at a natty's gone.
It's more like two in today's day and age.
Sadly, yes.
But that's not what college football is all about. College football is a totally different... Like you
have to get excited about a Pac-12 title.
Like, you can be like a CSU fan and love college football because you love the thing. Like, you love like the canon or whatever.
I guess, yeah, that's true.
We've got our resident CSU fan in
here. I mean, there's so much debate, too, to be had in college football. College football is just amazing.
I love college football, yeah. True. But anyways, he goes on. Do you think this would lead to changes in the NCAA, such as paying players? Will it finally rob the blue bloods of five-star recruits and create more parity among college teams? Definitely not that.
Nope.
What you will see, I think, is players who are pretty good, who struggle academically and can't get into some of these schools, instead of going the JUCO route,
yep,
going to some place like the XFL where they can make money. I mean, that makes perfect sense. It could end up really killing the JUCO.
Yeah, that's what I see.
Stuff.
It could end up killing these players' careers. Because if they make the jump to the XFL and then the XFL goes belly up, like 12 games in, like the AAF.
Right, that's true. It has to at least
you're
show.
You're really taking a risk.
Yeah, that's true. That's really true.
Especially high schoolers.
I think
that
they
could
have
be
a lot
devastating
more.
For a high school kid,
right? Because then you can't. It's not like you can go back.
You're
to
done.
College.
Can't go back to college.
You're done. Like your freshman season, halfway through, you spent it in the XFL. Now you gotta train for 2 years.
Yeah, I guess what
that'd
you
be
could,
tough.
I guess what you could do, is wait. Like the XFL, if the XFL can prove that it can make it through a whole season, they have a better TV deal than AAF did. They have more professional backing of people that they know what they're doing, so it'll be a little different. But yeah, I mean, don't be a high school kid right now who's like, I'm just going to the XFL, I gotta get that 75 G's.
No,
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that the USFL was doing. I think back in the day before the USFL came around, the NFL only allowed college seniors to come out, and the USFL kind of changed that and was taking in sophomores and juniors, and that kind of forced the NFL to change their eligibility rules. And so in a way, this could be good, and it could open up the market. I don't think it'll affect college football as much as it affects the NFL if this stuff
kind of, if it catches on for more than like 8 weeks.
For sure. All right. Now I think that's going to wrap up the podcast that never has ties and always gives away one fewer rose than there are contestants.
Sorry, Andre, again.
I hope you guys have a good one. And of course, we'll be back tomorrow on the BSN Broncos podcast. We'll see you then. It's getting me down, waiting for you.
Tax debt is impeding the growth of millions of small businesses in the U.S. That's why Symbio Tax and Administration's goal is to enable small businesses and individuals to make informed and calculated decisions when it comes to their taxes. Symbio Tax provides small business owners with expert services in resolving tax liabilities and providing financial clarity.
I would recommend George to anybody who has to deal with the IRS. His strengths and depth of knowledge make him really valuable. You know, over the course of years as a real estate broker, I've had the opportunity to talk with many different tax people. But the one thing I have found with George is he was very easy to work with. He was very articulate.
Symbio Tax is experienced in preparing returns for all income levels, as well as securing penalty abatements and settlements for qualified individuals that sometimes save the taxpayer thousands.
George was able to save us about $7,000, and of course, you know, being an independent real estate broker, $7,000 is a substantial amount of money, and it was really nice to get that dealt with.
They offer free consultations, so be sure to check out symbiotax.com for more information. That's SymbioTax.com.